Hi, everyone, and welcome to the Bold, Beautiful, Borderline podcast. My name is Lori, and today I am joined by Diane, who you would have heard in a previous episode about the three generations of borderline personality disorder. Really, really excited to have her here to talk a little bit about her experience as someone who identifies as having borderline and is a senior citizen. Before we get started, wanting to thank our new Patreon members. So happy to have you. We've got Kat, JK92, not sure your real name there, I Abide. I hope that that's correct. And Inge. So thank you all so much. We really, really appreciate you supporting our show. So Diane, we heard a little bit about your story on the other episode, but I just want to maybe give you the floor to talk a little bit more about yourself and like your experience and journey in case people didn't hear the first episode.
So yeah, my granddaughter was diagnosed about 6 years ago with BPD. And through that diagnosis, they give you they're not called criteria, but you may as well say criteria of borderline. And my daughter and myself, definitely we recognized ourselves in that as at the very least having borderline traits. And I say at the very least because as I've gotten into my senior years, I seem to have gotten much, almost, I would say, into. I could easily have a diagnosis at this time of borderline. I've become really emotionally dysregulated, which was not my experience. The degree was not my experience, you know, although again, I would have to say traits because, you know, there's not the suicide ideation and those kinds of things that, but certainly the degree of dysregulation is just off the charts. So
interesting.
Yeah.
And what about the other symptoms like abandonment and that kind of thing?
Absolutely. And so I was thinking about that because on the prior podcast that I did with my daughter and my granddaughter, they had mentioned abandonment. And I thought, have I ever really had that? And for me, I guess it's displayed in a different way. For me, it was always a fear of having somebody have control over me. So that fueled everything I did, you know, every decision I made. And so I wouldn't say fear of abandonment, because if that was going to happen, I was going to do it first. Do you see what I mean?
Which is also really common for people with BPD is being like, okay, I'm the one who's leaving first then, because I am too scared to stay in whatever this is. And I'm not going to let you abandon me because I'm going to abandon you.
This is me. Yes.
Yes.
This is me. So
interesting.
Yeah.
So I'm trying to think of like some of the other criteria. So you talked about the suicidality is not really a thing. It sounds like the abandonment is, but it's in a different way, which is super valid as well.
Absolutely.
And also just before maybe I ask about a couple of other criteria, it's also interesting because there is research showing that like over time and with age, BPD symptoms diminish. Right. So it's quite possible that like, you know, you might have had some other symptoms early on in your life and didn't really realize what they were necessarily. And then now they've kind of dissipated. So wondering about, what about like dissociation? Do you ever?
Absolutely. And actually, you know, I never really understood that before. And I've actually just started that with, and I did reckon I used to have that when I was young and didn't know. And then for all these years, I didn't. So I would say for 2 years now, and I actually had to ask my daughter and granddaughter what this was that was happening. And they said, that's dissociation. And I was like, that's what that is. Yeah. You know, so yeah. That's absolutely there. And it's startling that at 65, I'd say at 63 at that time, it would, yes, in my teenage years, but you get busy with life and maybe I have no explanation as to why it's the last 2 years have been, and I really hate that feeling.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I really hate that.
Well, and there's something to be said for just increased self-awareness, right? I know for my dad, because he's 60, and probably like 5 or 6 years ago, he started kind of identifying with the borderline traits kind of thing, right? And for him, it's like these symptoms have been going on forever. He just didn't recognize that they were symptoms. He just thought like, this is who I am as a person, which I mean, at the end of the day, it kind of is still who you are as a person, but like that self-realization made a big difference in his ability to like articulate some of these symptoms. And it sounds like for dissociation, that was similar for you.
Yeah, that makes sense to me because when you're young, you're so, and you do have borderline or any kind of emotional dysregulation, you're all about you, you know, it's everything because you can't see past what the thing.
Life is so overwhelming as it is, right?
Like absolutely.
You're just trying to survive, right?
And then you go through a period for myself, my experience was, you know, raising my kids and you're busy and you're moving and you're doing this and you're doing that. And you're both working and that's life. Now I'm at the other end of that where I'm retired. And my husband is retired. And I guess I have that quiet time, but I guess that's now the dissociation is becoming more noticeable.
Yeah. I mean, I don't think that's an uncommon experience either, where like a lot of people don't give themselves the time to slow down to avoid feelings of dissociation.
And that's me exactly. And actually, I have a son that's living with us, and he says, "You're the busiest retired person I've ever met." He said, "You don't have to be this busy." And that is me 100%. I don't slow down. I have to always be occupied. And my body doesn't let me do that all the time. So there are times I do have to slow down. And yeah, I guess that makes perfect sense that the dissociation I'd be experiencing that now because my body doesn't let me keep going like a 40-year-old, right?
Yeah. I mean, like I'm not a scientist, I'm not a doctor. I can't say for sure, but I know that like, for me, that's definitely a thing. If you're busy enough, you just can't notice the dissociation.
That's
so
it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So have you ever thought about seeking out a diagnosis?
So I'm just considering that now, and I've been reeling the last 2 years because I've just been so dissociated and I'm thinking like, what? I've had all these skills the last 6 years or so, and I've been really successful at, you know, at implementing those skills. And suddenly there's just been this perfect storm in our lives that just happened, you know, and I see it in some of my friends who are not dysregulated, that they're having a tough time coping with retirement and all the consequences of that. And so I've just started realizing if they are having trouble, the most sane, stable, emotionally stable people I know, and I've known these people for more than 40 years, and there's a few of them, if they are having a tough time, it would explain, it would be understandable that someone that struggles with emotional dysregulation would be having a much greater. So yes, so I'm just now at that point trying to seek out, you know, a diagnosis and what kind of support, what kind of help. As a senior, if you have dementia, you get help. I did try counseling through a mental health, one of the mental health units, and was during the pandemic. Didn't find that successful at all. Very patronizing as a senior. I felt it was very patronizing. And maybe that's a BPD thing too. I don't like counselors. I don't, not that I don't like them. I don't think they get me kind of.
Right.
Thing.
Have a hard time relating. Yeah,
absolutely.
And I mean, I think there is probably for sure something to be said about like ageism in the healthcare system. I just, for clarity, for people who are listening, Diane's in Canada as well. So if you're wondering about like system wise, just because it changes drastically depending on where you are in the world. So yeah, I mean, also really interesting point about the dementia thing, right? I wouldn't have thought of that, but yeah, that's probably where a ton of the mental health resources for seniors is going.
Absolutely. Understandably necessary.
Oh, totally. Not to take away from it.
No. No, but you know, in Canada, our mental health care system needs a lot of work all across the board.
Yeah.
It doesn't matter whether you're a senior or if you're a teenager, it doesn't matter.
Yeah, absolutely. You
know, we need an overhaul, right?
Major overhaul. Oh my gosh.
At least, right?
Totally. So when you kind of are thinking about getting a diagnosis, did you go through your family doc? Do you have a family doctor? I mean, I guess that's another question.
I do. I haven't yet. I've just been dealing with some other health issues right now that have kind of piled onto me. And yes, but I'm actually making an appointment tomorrow for something else. And I imagine that's how you go. Honestly, I have to have that conversation with my daughter because she would know how I would do that, right? So that's definitely a conversation I'm going to have within the next week or so, because I'm really, I mean, when you've had these skills and then and you learn how to talk to somebody that's dysregulated, and then you're becoming like really dysregulated. Lori, it's so strange because there's this, you know, when you're dysregulated, but when you're skilled and dysregulated, there's this in the back of your mind, you know what you're saying is not necessarily true or it's exaggerated. Yeah. And you're telling yourself, now step back, or you know that's not true, but you don't have the ability to stop it until the steam has all blown off, right? It's like a pressure cooker. Yeah. So when I was young and dysregulated, I was just dysregulated. But now it's the oddest thing because there's a skill set that's trying to get out there, right? And it just can't get out there.
And sometimes that's almost more frustrating.
It is more frustrating.
Because you're like, oh, I know what to do, but I can't do it. And you're just like, please, I just want to know what to do.
That's it. And it is frustrating. And yeah, I'm actually really surprised to be at this level of dysregulation at this time of my life when I have not been, you know, there's been decades of relative, dysregulation, but not to this degree. And then to have the skill set that I've learned over the 6 years and not be able to access it when I'm dysregulated, it is frustrating.
Frustrating for sure. And also I just want to like validate that not only you've retired in the last 2 years, but also you've lived through a pandemic. You've had family members who have had mental health challenges themselves. There are as many climate related issues that are really stressful. The economy, so many things in the last couple of years that would dysregulate anyone. And so if you're predisposed to dysregulation and you have this major life change like retirement, I mean, are we surprised? I don't know.
Yeah, it makes a lot of sense. And, you know, as you get older, you start losing family members that are older than you. And we've had a number of those things happen, my husband and I both, and we both have health challenges. And it just seems like every decade as we get, you know, older, there's more health challenges. So we both have major health challenges as well that have developed over the last few years. So yeah, it's understandable. And I recognize I'm not getting out of this one without support and without help. That's the thing,
huge.
Right?
Yeah. And so that brings me to one of my next questions, which would be, what would the diagnosis do for you? Like, what makes you want to seek out a diagnosis?
To have that diagnosis for me would allow me to have a more honest conversation with my doctor, for one thing. It would, I think, help my granddaughter as well, help my grandchildren, because here's this grandmother that's been pretty stable over the years, and all of a sudden she's a crazy lady. And they're well aware of BPD, but they're not necessarily attaching that to me. And you can say to people, well, you know, you have BPD tendencies, but tendencies mean nothing to mostly, even to my grandchildren. My granddaughter, yes, but her brothers, no, you know, or to my husband or my son, you know, or other people that deal with me, to have an absolute diagnosis would be. And then it's conversation opens up, and there are skill set, and there are things that I can do, and there are support groups, you know. But I find that when you say tendencies, people tend to downplay it. Right.
Yeah. And I mean, that's a super valid reason to want a diagnosis, right? And everybody's reasons are different. And for me, for example, I'm thinking about another diagnosis that I'm like seeking. And it, to me, it's just the validation of being told like, yes, this is actually what's happening, as opposed to like, is it not? I don't know. Maybe I don't fit in. Maybe I do, which is a big, big reason as well and can help get treatment.
Yes. And I was just going to say that. And for me too, it's the fact that if I have that and I phone the mental health clinics, they're not going to well, you're retired and you're older. And when I have that diagnosis, then they have to look at me as somebody with BPD, not as an aging person that just maybe is overwhelmed, right? I think that's really important too.
Yeah. And with the family history that you have, I mean, it makes sense. This stuff doesn't come, it's not anybody's fault, but it doesn't come out of nowhere. Like, it's not a fluke that you and your daughter and your granddaughter all resonate with BPD and that your granddaughter has a diagnosis, right?
Absolutely. Like,
not a fluke.
No, it's not.
And so you talked before about how you said, well, I have skills. And Justin, because I can't remember if we went through this in the previous episode, but do you want to talk about how you gained those skills and how you've learned about all of these things?
Sure. So when my granddaughter was diagnosed, parent in residence at the Children's and Youth Psychiatric Unit, I can't exactly remember what CAPSU, recommended a support group to us. And we went there and we learned about family connections and Sash Bear and got some of those, a lot of those skills. And then I connected with the people that ran the support group, have a nonprofit Emotions BC, and I connected with that and again, support groups and those two programs.
So it was mostly support groups for family members of people with BPD.
Yes.
That's the difference, right?
Yeah. Well, this is a thing. And I've never, honestly, never thought until this point that I need support for myself. And so, you know, I totally intend to be involved in your Super Feelers Club. Like, I just really need to be around people where I can say, like, I just blew up. And be honest and totally. Have a group of people that like get that. And, you know, so yes. Yeah, so now I'm at the point where I know I'm pretty skilled at other. Yeah. Now I do need the support for myself. Yeah. And I think this past week and thinking over what it means to be a senior with BPD and what my experience has been, it's just been this past week that I've come to the realization that no, I need support because I'm dysregulated and I need to be with people that are dysregulated and get it.
And you deserve that support.
Yeah, absolutely.
And what's nice is that actually a lot of the skills that you would have learned in the other support groups and family connections will be translatable to what you're going to learn, but it'll be the other side. It's actually probably it'll probably be way easier to pick up the skills from the other side of things because you've already heard the family member, loved one side explained. And yeah, I've said this to you before in person, but you are always welcome at Super Feelers. And we have an individual who comes, who's probably your age, I would guess. It's anybody over 18 can come. We have no limits on age. And we intentionally call it Super Feelers because we don't want to limit to diagnoses, right?
That's right.
Because people that have emotion regulation challenges still can support each other regardless of whether or not they have a diagnosis. And a lot of the time diagnosis or non-diagnosis isn't because of the ability to get a diagnosis is often not actually anything to do with the symptoms that you have or the validity of the diagnosis. It's actually more the access to the diagnosis.
Right.
And my guess, and I hope that this isn't the case for you, but my guess is that at 65, right, it's going to be pretty hard to get a diagnosis.
Yeah. Yes. And I have wonderful advocates in my daughter and my granddaughter, and they can help me
totally
present my case. And I'm a pretty strong force to reckon with when I want to be. So if I push long enough and hard enough, it will happen.
Yeah, so. Absolutely. And I hope that it does. And I don't doubt you for a second or your family. It's more just the system it's quite the system, you know? Yeah. I mean, I was talking to my doctor the other day and I'm trying to seek out this psychiatric referral for the OCD stuff that I've been kind of thinking about. Very similar situation as you is like, I'm pretty sure this is what it is, but I really just need that validation. Yeah. And despite having 25 years of documented mental health issues on my medical record, it's it was like, I don't know, like we may or may not. And it's like, come on. You know what I mean? I can't get a psychiatric referral. Are you freaking kidding me? Like, pretty sure that I need one. Like, this is ridiculous. Anyways, I don't want to talk about myself, but it's, the system itself is flawed, and ageism is probably something that will come up. And I haven't heard a lot about that, but I think that's also because people of your generation don't often have really open conversations about mental health.
That's right. As far as ageism goes, you know, and it's not really overt, and it's just that sort of patronizing, oh, honey, you know, oh, dear, you know, it's just, well, with the counselor that I had sessions, you know, it's just COVID. I said, no, this is not just COVID. This started before COVID, and it's gradually getting worse. This is not, oh, no, and you just, you know, and it's almost like, I wonder what would have happened if they don't ask your age, how I would have been treated, right?
Totally. You know? And like the, it's just COVID thing. Like, I mean, I did say earlier, and I hope that that wasn't invalidating to say these are factors that will impact our mental health, but it's not the factor, and it doesn't diminish the fact that you need support.
That's right. So, and it's not just any one thing. When you say just, it's like saying, but. Right.
Totally.
You know, it totally negates anything. Yeah. Just, no, it's not just. And that's what I said. Of course, it plays a part in it. We were isolated, and seniors, again, were isolated. We were terrified. And I mean, we weren't the only ones, but, you know, we were terrified for a long time.
You could have, I don't know if you did, but you easily could have lost friends and family that are your age. So, there's that added level of fear and grief and all of these things as well.
Absolutely. We didn't, you know, I'm thankful for that. We did lose some friends, not real close to the family, but, you know, but not close family members. And we were very careful. But no, there was a lot of fear for everybody. Like that went across, there were no boundaries to fear with COVID, right? You know?
No.
But it wasn't just...
Totally, not in the slightest. Yeah. I really think that you would love the Super Feelers Club, because it is that intense amount of validation and love and support. And just like personality wise, I know that you would fit in really well.
Awesome.
So yeah, I mean, you're always welcome to join us, and we would love to have you. I wonder, did you have any like mental health challenges as a kid that you can remember?
So yeah, I did. My parents had 12 kids, so they ran a very tight ship, but I was always anxious. I had a lot of physical problems that I would get sick, like feel sick for days at certain foods, but you didn't complain. They did the best they could, you know, they provided food for us. We couldn't very well say, well, this stuff makes me sick. There's no choice. You know, we're talking a long time ago. And I was, from the age of 5, I don't remember being joyful or happy. And I remember the exact day. It was the day that I was coming home from kindergarten. It was the last day of kindergarten. I was skipping and I was happy. And for some reason, after that day, I really never, ever achieved the amount of happiness or joy. I would say joy. I've been happy, but that kind of, just that free expression of joy. And yeah. And then when I got to be in my teens, I had a lot of depression. I have always lived with anxiety, and there are times when it's overwhelming, and there are times when I can control it somewhat. There have been times when all I could do was cocoon myself for days and curl up on the couch for days because I couldn't do it. Now, when I was in my early married life, I realized that a lot of my emotional dysregulation was a result of anxiety, unexpressed anxiety, and I couldn't express it just because I wasn't raised that way.
Yeah.
I wasn't raised to rage all over the place either, but it seemed easier, you know, so, but yeah, I don't, I've always... depression I've suffered off and on throughout the years. I've had wonderful doctors that have worked with me. I've never wanted to be on antidepressants long-term. So I've always done short-term, several courses of short-term over the decades. We've tried every anti-anxiety medication there is. I cannot tolerate a lot of medications. They make my heart race. Here's the loss of control thing. I cannot take anything that will make my mind or brain fuzzy because I just can't tolerate that. I have to be clear-headed. And yeah. So my doctor gave up. He said, we've tried everything. These are going to make your head. They're going to make your head fuzzy, or they're going to make your body feel, I don't care about my body. I just want my mind to be clear. And he said, well, the next thing we'll do is send you to a psychiatrist. I said, and they're going to give me medication because that's what psychiatrists do. And I'm not taking the medication. And I mean, he's a great doctor. He really is. And he was just so frustrated, you know, but I mean, I deal with the anxiety. It's not overwhelming at this point in my life. If it becomes overwhelming, then I start cocooning again. Maybe that's not the healthiest way to do it, but that's the way I have to do it.
Survival.
Yeah.
And medication we've talked about medication so much on this podcast, but medication is tough. And to be honest, I was just reflecting while you were talking about how much more difficult that probably is as you age, because you're probably either dealing with other health issues or more likely to get other health issues, right? So like I don't know your health situation. I don't need to know your health situation, but like, you know, high blood pressure, diabetes, like any of these other like physical health things that may or may not impact what medications you can take. So I would assume that your scope of options is more and more limited the longer you go.
Absolutely. I have a whole host of medications I take, and these are not necessarily age-related conditions, because my health conditions started when I was in my 20s, and it just... you know, every decade brought something more, but it's all related to just a poor immune system, right? So yeah, I'm on a lot of different medications, but I'm really careful that none of the medication, if I were in severe pain and it was, okay, I can't stand this pain, of course I'm going to take something regardless of how it's going to affect the clarity of my mind. It's priorities, right? But that's not the situation. I've lived with anxiety all my life. If I can't find a medication that doesn't make me a zombie or whatever, like for me, I'll just deal with it in my own way, right? Antidepressants, I've had great success with antidepressants. I've had no problems. I just don't want to be on them long term. And I'm always careful. I work really closely with my doctors with antidepressants and that, because, you know, when you're doing short term like that, you can't.
Yeah, you don't mess around.
No, you don't. You need to be under medical care to do that.
Mm-hmm.
You know,
totally. And that's a really important piece too, right? Is if you are on antidepressants or any mental health medication for the rest of your life, that's valid. If you don't want to be on them for the rest of your life, that's valid. But you need to work with a healthcare provider on it. You can't mess around with your brain.
Absolutely.
Especially if your brain is sensitive, like our brains.
That's right. No, it's true.
So if you wanted the world to know about what it was like to be a senior who lived with mental health challenges or BPD or emotion regulation, dysregulation, mm-hmm. whatever, what would you want them to know?
I would want them to know, if somebody that doesn't know me and sees me dysregulated, I would want them to know that I have a condition that at this point in time is not controlled. It's not just like you mentioned diabetes. We can have diabetes and it's not under control, or we can have diabetes that is not under control. And I would like them to know that I've lived with this all my life, and there have been times when it's been out of control, and there have been times when it's been under control. And this is one of those times that, you know, I'm struggling and I am moving towards getting support and learning once again how to regulate my emotions. And for those people that know me and care for me, I would like them to know that just cut this last 2 years out of your picture of who I am or who I was to you. My grandchildren, I would say, just cut that little picture, that 2 or 3 year picture, just kind of cut it out. Let the overall experience of me being your grandma or your friend or your sister, just let it absorb those 2 years until it's, you know, does that make sense to you?
Oh, that makes so much sense to me. And it sounds like relationships have really been tested or suffered because of the way that you're feeling recently. And I really like that idea of like cutting out those years, yeah. Right? Because I mean, I've had some pretty freaking horrible years that have made it so that family and friends take years and years and years or never come around to who I am now or who I was pre that moment or that couple years. I've never heard anybody explain it like that, but it resonates a lot.
Well, you know, you can have a whole history with people and they know you and they know your heart. And then suddenly you're not the support for them that they're used to you being, right? And so they see you dysregulated and all of a sudden it's like, I don't even know you. Who are you? And I guess the ability isn't there to support me because I've been the support, I think.
And yeah. That's time limited. You can't support everyone around you and not support yourself because that you will burn out. And, you know, maybe this is an example of that is now it's time to prioritize yourself because otherwise none of those people can be supported, right? And it's not your responsibility to support other people. It's a good thing to do if you have the ability and the capacity and your own like stability to do so, but you can't prioritize others to the detriment of yourself.
You're right. And that's, that's certainly struck home, you know, because you just run out of steam. You just can't do it, right? So yeah, that's what this is all about. I'm at that point now where once again, I'm seeking help and that's good. And that's healthy and that's right, you know, for me.
Absolutely. And I'm really thankful that you are willing to share your story and still be a support for others. I mean, I know you're really involved in a lot of the organizations that support families and people with BPD. So even if you can't necessarily support everyone in your life on that individual basis, you're still making a big difference for the collective of us out there.
And it's a pleasure to be able to do that. And, you know, when you've gotten so much from these organizations, to be able to give back and to understand that every time you give to this organization, whether it's your time, your money, whatever it is, whatever kind of support you can give, you're helping families, you're helping individuals, you're helping real people who need support and help, you know?
And your life was changed by them. So you totally get it.
Absolutely.
Well, Diane, thank you so much for coming on and sharing your story. I really, really appreciate everything you said. And I would love to hear how your experience goes when you do chat with your doctor about this and seek out that diagnosis. I mean, you know, write down your thoughts even and let us know, because I'm sure the audience will be really interested in an update. Always happy to have you back. And we would love to have you at Super Feelers. Awesome. Absolutely love it.
You'll see me.
You know? Excellent.
And I will update you, Lori. And I really appreciate the chance that you've given me to come on today and share a little bit of my story.
Hi, friends. Thank you so much for listening to this episode of the Bold, Beautiful, Borderline podcast. Lori and I are so grateful that you're here with us on this journey, and we can't wait to dive into more topics in the future with you all about borderline and even have some more fun and exciting guests to join us on the podcast. If you really enjoyed this episode, we would love if you would rate, review, and subscribe to the podcast wherever you listen. We would also love to see you interact with us on social media and on our Patreon page. The links to that are included in the show notes, so check us out there. We would be incredibly honored to get to know you all as you get to know us and our recovery stories. We love you, and we'll see you next time.